Welcome to Red Alert Radio. Grassroots radio with an ear on the issues that matter to you.
Kia ora koutou, ko Julie Ferry tuku ingoa. Oika te maunga, ko wairau te awa, ko waitemata te whanga, tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou katoa. Kia ora, my name's Julie Ferry. I'm one of five Roskill Community Voice Reps on the Pukitāpapa Local Board of Auckland Council. I'm part of the City Vision Centre-Left whānau and I have a monthly spot here on Red Alert Radio. I'm very keen to get your feedback. You can find me easily on social media, both Twitter and Facebook, because luckily I have a funny last name. If you search for Julie Ferry, that's about F for Fred, A-I-R-E-Y. You should be able to find me pretty easily. We also have a Red Alert Radio Facebook page. If you put Red Alert Radio AKL into the Facebook search box, you should find us. And we put up links to these shows as podcasts once they're up online, as well as other bits of useful news relevant to the topics we cover. You can get all of our past shows on the Red Alert Radio archive, which is also on the Planet Audio website, planetaudio.org.nz. Now, today I'm talking with a guest that I've talked with before a couple of times, but this time she's doing something a bit daring and exciting. So I'm chatting with Pippa Coombe, who is currently chair of the Waitemata Local Board, and with the elections coming up this year, she has very bravely, I think, put her hand up to run for the governing body to represent Waitemata and the Gulf Islands alongside the mayor and the other 19 councillors of Auckland. So she's not running for the local board again. She's decided she's all in and she's going for governing body. So I thought this was a good opportunity to talk with her about why she's doing that and what she's learnt from being on the local board and what she thinks she can bring to the governing body if she's successful. So thanks for joining us today, Pippa.
Kia ora, Julie. Thank you for having me on again.
No worries. Now, you've probably learned a lot from being on the local board. And when were you first elected?
So I'm into my ninth year, first elected in 2010 at the beginning of the Super City.
Yep. And you were deputy chair?
So deputy chair for two terms, and at the moment I am chair of the board.
Yep.
So really enjoyed that time, and it's been an immense privilege to be representing the central city and central suburbs of Auckland.
And so what do you think, what has sort of been your top two things you've learnt from being on the local board for the last 9 years? Because your background, maybe talk a little bit too about your background before local government. Is there anything in particular that's sort of changed how you think and feel from the last 9 years?
Well, I think being on the local board, it has been fantastic in terms of seeing what is possible through local government and local decision making and getting projects done that the community asks for. And I'm a great believer in kind of the art of the possible, and that if a good idea comes along, we can make it happen. And I think that's where local boards can be quite nimble. They do have some budget and they can get a lot done. What we do struggle with, I think there's a perception that local boards have got no power and that Auckland Council is sort of out of control. And also a perception that I think people don't really realise how much local government actually impacts on our everyday life.
Yeah.
So for me, that's been a bit of a theme, I guess, in terms of trying to make sure that local government does feel meaningful and actually get stuff done. And to be part of that has been really exciting.
And so it's, Waitemata Local Board is sort of the glamour board of the 21 local boards, which is not to denigrate the others, but it's the one that has the city centre, and so it's the one that people sort of who are from outside the area interact with the most and have the most awareness of, even if they don't go there. The one they're most likely to see on their TV screens, that kind of thing. How has that sort of played out being the local board for that area?
Yeah, we do like to say that we're the beating heart of Tamaki Makaurau, and we do play host to the region. So So it means there's an immense amount happening in Waitemata, and the local board obviously plays a big role to that, but we also, it means there's a lot of development underway from Panuku, where most of the regional facilities are, and so we have a lot of interaction with the council-controlled organisations and also with a lot of the regional stuff happening. So it's a very dynamic area to represent, and it's also an area where there's a huge amount of pressure on because of the growth and people coming into the city centre. Just in terms of residential growth, that's almost tripled in the time that we have been a local board of people living in what used to be the old CBD.
Wow. And that's got to have an impact on services.
Yeah, so this is having a huge impact on people wanting, quite rightly, to have a really good level of service from council, but where the growth is not keeping up with the amount of income that council has as well. And so I think that's something that we're really keen to see being done better, is just to ensure that people can, say, for example, live in the city centre, can enjoy a really nice, pleasant environment and not have to deal with issues around rubbish collection, noise, pollution. You know, there's a lot of there's a real need to make sure that we're ensuring that the city centre functions for the residents, but also for all of the people who are coming in for study, for work, and visitors as well.
So why then consider running for governing body instead of local board? Because the governing body is more in that regional space.
Yeah.
And so what sort of made you go, you know what, I've done my dash with local boards, or however you feel about it, it's time for me to try a different way of making a difference. What's been your motivator there?
Well, I like to think that I've made a big contribution on being on the local board, and that after 9 years, it does mean that I now have a lot to contribute to being on a governing body, and I've seen how the governing body operates, and I feel that we're at a time where I really want to back Mayor Phil and his second term, but he needs to have a governing body, a council that can really work efficiently, and so I'd like to be part of that, to be a functional governing body, and to be to make a positive contribution to the councillors that are there who want to support the mayor's agenda.
What's the sort of number one thing you like about the mayor's agenda?
Well, I think he's offering a very progressive vision for Auckland, and he talks about making Auckland a great place that talent wants to live, that is a smart city. And he talks to the issues that we do have in Auckland that we do need to respond to growth, to housing, the environment, community connectedness. And he's got a lot of energy that he brings to that and wants to make a difference. So I really would like to see that a progressive response to the change that we're going through, that we can't stop the growth that's happening, but we can do it in a way that means it's the best possible outcomes for the people who live in Auckland. So I'd like to be part of that in a positive way. And I think to be able to allow the mayor to function really effectively is going to be key going into the next term.
Okay. So 9 years on the local board. What did you do before that?
My background is as a lawyer. I was an in-house lawyer, but I haven't actually practiced as a lawyer for over 10 years now. And my focus has really been on community development, sustainability, and active transport were kind of the areas that I was focused on as a community activist before I got elected.
Yeah, and I know that you've done heaps of work in the transport space. What would be sort of the favourite project or program that you've worked on in that space?
Yeah, we have seen a lot of change happening in terms of people's attitude around how they get around the city, and it's been great to see that there's much more acceptance now that we should have transport choice, and that, you know, jumping on a bike or walking or taking a scooter or Ubering or just, you know, mixing it up is not considered to be kind of fringe. That's just the way that a smart city functions. And of course we see that the most in Waitemata, being a city centre, and, you know, huge uptake in public transport. I guess in terms of locally, I mean, I love seeing our greenways. We've got one main greenway route that's been opened, and seeing how people actually use that for a commuter route and for recreation. I guess there's also a bit of frustration that it's been quite slow to get more walking and cycling projects completed. So there's still a lot more to do, but I think there's been a big change of attitude, and there's a huge latent demand for people just to be able to get around safely, get kids to school in ways that aren't using the car.
Yeah, so the one of the transformational projects about the city centre and indeed about the transport system is the City Rail Link. How do you feel that's going? And obviously that's had a massive impact on the local board you're on and the ward you seek to represent. You know, what's your view on that?
Well, you think, I mean, it was only 8 years ago that people were calling the local board, calling the CRL, Len's train set, calling it a loop and really being very denigrating about it, whereas and dismissing it as a transport project. And now it's actually underway, and people can see that this is what an international city needs, is an underground connection and a rail network that's fully integrated and works for the region, and the CRL is going to really unlock that. So, I mean, the fact that the project is getting dug right now and we're going to see it opened in the next 5 years, I think is all credit to Len Brown for really pushing that project through and getting people to believe in it.
He's left a bit of a legacy there, I think, once it's all open.
Absolutely, and I think it's often a bit forgotten that he really, that was his big policy difference going into the Super City election in 2010, and I think now there's this huge understanding about what the project is and how it isn't, you know, actually Waitemata doesn't actually get a huge benefit from it. It's actually people out, you know, in Henderson who are going to have a huge difference with their commute, and even people on the North Shore who are going to be able to, it's going to open their access up for a much bigger part of the rapid transport network by having the CRL open.
But you are going to get two train stations out of it, Aotea and Karangahape. How do you feel like that placemaking opportunity is being embraced?
Well, we're actually going to get a third, because a big chunk of the Mount Eden station is in Waitemata.
There we go.
So, yes, I didn't say we're not going to benefit. I mean, absolutely, there are the benefits for the whole of Auckland. I guess I was thinking about the travel time savings, particularly for commuters. But in terms of the development uplift and the jobs, and also we're going to have all these new brownfield sites, particularly around Mount Eden Station, and I guess that's something that I'm interested in working on the governing body, is what is going to be the development around that station, and how much housing are we going to be able to incorporate, and is it going to be affordable housing? And, you know, what's the community that's going to develop around that station? Because it is a huge piece of land that's going to be opened up for development.
I'm quite familiar with that because my bus, I often catch a 27 or a 25 from Roskill into the city, and at the moment they go past there, and indeed sometimes I get off there to connect with the existing train station, which is not that great. And it is really exciting to think about that sort of uptown end of the city and, you know, the stimulus that the station and development around the station could provide, because it is a bit of a sort of neglected part of Yeah, I sort of hesitate to say it's Mount Eden too, even though it's right by the Maunga. It sort of feels in a lot of ways like it's not really Mount Eden. So it'll be great to have something that gives it a real sense of identity and focus.
Yeah, I think it needs a new name because it is kind of almost, it's closer to Eden Terrace, Grafton in a way than it is to actual Mount Eden Village.
Yeah. So we've talked about trains. And we've talked about transport generally. Your ward would include Barrier and Waiheke. So they don't have any trains, but they do have ferries. Have you given any thought to what your role might be on governing body in terms of that? Because I don't think Auckland Transport has done a ferry strategy yet. They've done a lot of work on trains and a lot of work on buses, but they haven't really grappled with the hard issues around ferries, and I imagine that's going to be pretty important to people on Waiheke and Barrier.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the ferry is the lifeblood for the island, particularly Waiheke. And a big part is just how do we get the ferries working better with the current monopoly, and part of that is the conversation with government that needs to bring the contract model into the rest of the public transport operating model, which is called PTOM.
Yep.
I think that's the acronym. So that really needs this pressure on that, and there's also how the ferry terminal works down on Queen's Wharf and ensuring the infrastructure is fit for purpose and provides what ferry passenger needs. So there's a lot more work that's needed on ferries to really make them work efficiently and cost effectively.
And there's also other routes that could be opened up to provide more connection. I have a family member who sometimes catches the ferry from Gulf Harbour because she works right, in Wynyard Quarter, and that made a lot of sense. We've now just seen the ferries opened up to Hobsonville Point on the weekends now. So there's, in my neck of the woods, we often talk about wouldn't it be great to get ferries back on the Manukau.
Yeah.
But really, we need to sort out the Waitata first.
Yeah. I mean, you've got, say, Hobsonville opening up with a huge residential area there, and they don't have enough ferry capacity already, even though they've increased services and it's opened up at weekends. So there's a lot more that needs investment that's needed into the ferries as part of the transport network.
Yeah, real potential. It's quite fun going on. I've never commuted by ferry, but I imagine it can be quite a nice way to start your working day, actually, on the boat, a bit of fresh air.
Yeah.
So we've talked quite a bit about transport, and I know that you're really passionate about it, and you've got, firm advocacy record in that space as well. If all our transport problems were solved tomorrow, we woke up and Auckland Transport had miraculously overnight solved everything, what would be your priority to address on governing body?
I'm not sure about picking one, but in terms of...
You can pick a few.
Well, I mean, totally to acknowledge also, the ward that I want to represent is taking in the islands and understanding the environmental issues on the islands, particularly around pest control and water quality. So those are some big ones. And understanding what the local issues are there. I mean, the local board for Great Barrier in Waiheke, they're very resourceful and independent. So it's recognising the strengths that they bring to those local communities and making sure that I can be a strong voice for them on the governing body for the projects that they prioritise. Whether it's around marina development or not developing or tourism strategies, environmental strategies, the pest management so that they do become pest-free islands. I know those are all important, but sort of understanding what those local issues are. The environment is obviously a big issue for the whole of Auckland, but particularly the fact that we still have got sewage going into Waitata Harbour when, heavy downfall. And that is, there's been Central Interceptor is finally underway after sort of 30 years of delay, but there's still a lot of issues that need to be fixed. And you know, our water quality generally in streams and rivers, the whole region. So it's how are we going to grow smartly and sustainably? And so there's a lot of work to be done in that kind of space, because at the moment, you know, we're looking at adding the same number of people as Hamilton to the Auckland area into greenfield sites, which has the potential for a lot of environmental damage. So there's a lot of development issues. Again, it's about how do we manage growth smartly and sustainably, and how do we fund it as well?
Yeah.
So, and then at the same time, you know, it's those issues around funding, funding that growth, and also how do we, how does the city grow where we also ensure that people feel included and that community connections are maintained. So, you know, for me, it's a big focus on community development and strong local communities and local decision making being really empowered.
So that's really interesting, because I was thinking about Waitemata as a ward and how from the outside someone like me might look at it sometimes and think it's very vibrant and connected, but actually you must have these pockets of isolation, and obviously there's a certain amount of isolation from living on an island, but also a lot of apartment blocks are kind of like little islands, you know, where people don't necessarily know their neighbours. They go in, you know, everybody's doors shut, you don't necessarily have a common space. So how do you feel like that challenge could potentially you know, play out as the population grows? And I'm thinking about, for example, the work that Waitemata did with the Alan Melville Centre and getting that reopened and making it a real community heart. What do you think?
Yeah, well, the Alan Melville Centre is a really fantastic case study, because that was one of the few projects that actually anticipated the huge growth in residential living in the city centre, and we've turned that into, you know, a vibrant community hub. And it's how do we make that work really effectively for the residents primarily, so they do feel like it's their living room, that they can just drop by and that there are programs and events on there that bring them together. So, I mean, the Ella Melville Centre is going really well. But in terms of overall, like, there's a lot of people living in apartments who probably have very little contact with council, don't know that we're there, and how do we respond to their needs and ensure that they feel part of the neighbourhood? And one of the big issues is just around how the city centre functions. So I've been at a workshop today where we were talking about, you know, is going to become a priority. City living is going to become one of the focus areas in the new city centre master plan. Is proposed, and that's really welcome, because we've had this sort of, there's been a bit of a resistance to people living in the city and responding to their needs, like they're expected just to put up with all of the noise and rubbish and light pollution that comes with city centre living, whereas actually, you know, we need to be far more responsive to how do we make it a great place to live for families and people of all kind of abilities and ages and ethnicities.
Would you, I know you've travelled quite a bit, would you, are there any overseas sort of cities that you feel are particularly good examples that Auckland might look to? I mean, every city has its problems.
Yeah.
But with that rapid explosion in the central city population, you know, I look at somewhere like Paris, and of course they don't go, I think, above six stories or something, but they've got a lot of six-story buildings, you know. And that's not an option for us. But are there any particular cities overseas that you would look to and think that's the kind of thing Auckland should be looking at?
I wish I was that well-travelled and I'd have the opportunity for a study tour. Would be fabulous, because there's a lot of cities that I admire just from, you know,
from a distance.
From a distance, who's studying them, but there do seem to be some factors that make cities the best places to live, and a lot of that is around walkability, accessibility, having city centres that are focused around people rather than traffic, that are growing sustainably, so more kind of medium rise development rather than just pockets of high rise and then lots of urban sprawl, and then all of the kind of the amenities that are in a city, so that people, you know, can have access to groceries and to schools and community facilities without having to do lots of travel, and that's all catered for in the city. So, for example, you know, we don't have a city centre primary school yet, but that's probably going to have to come in the next decade if the growth continues.
And of course, where's that going to go? And of course, it's probably going to have to look quite different from your typical suburban or rural primary school, where you've got your playing fields and you've got a whole lot of one-story, maybe two-story buildings. City centre primary school is going to be quite a different kettle of fish.
Absolutely, and I guess that also highlights the a priority around our green spaces and planting trees and making them at a really lovely environment will be that we're going to have more density, more people. We've got to make the most of our green spaces in our city streets for trees and for, more pocket parks and places for people to gather, and have a much better allocation of space in the city. At the moment, we're using huge amounts of space to store cars and for traffic, which actually is going to be much more productive and environmental if we make that space available for people.
Yeah. So we've got a couple of minutes left. I wanted to ask you about your sort of political heroes and villains. Sort of give a little bit of an insight into your values and sort of the way that you approach politics. And I thought I'd give you a chance to pick a couple of heroes and maybe if you wanted to, a villain or two as well. Who do you sort of think does a good job or did a good job? Don't have to be alive. That might be easier, actually, not picking favourites. Who do you think's done a good job and who do you think you would like to try and not be like?
that's mean getting me to pick favourites.
That's why I suggested don't pick someone living.
Town, Aucklanders. I mean, I guess, I really, the councillors I admire. I mean, I admire Penny Holes, who's now decided to retire on her own terms.
Yeah.
I think that's always an attribute for a politician, to know when it's time to retire and to go out on a high. And I think she's also someone who's very positive and good at relationships around the governing body table, and that's, something that I'd like to bring to council.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's, political figures. Admire a lot of women politicians, and I guess, our Prime Minister's an obvious one who's up there at the moment just showing what leadership can be when it's compassionate and empathetic and strong.
And you're an easy out here because you grew up, you're actually from England, aren't you?
Yes, I did grow up till I was 14 in the UK, so we kind of were running away from Thatcher's England when we came here in the early 80s.
So you don't want to be the next Maggie Thatcher?
Yeah, so that's definitely not my style of politics. She was very divisive and I think created a lot of the issues that the UK is confronting today by not even recognising society as a thing or community capacity, what the community could bring to...
Yeah, that potential that you want to embrace and nurture as a governing body member. Yeah. Thanks, Pippa. We're out of time. And thanks for listening, folks. Love to hear your feedback. This was Julie Ferry for Red Alert Radio with Pippa Coombe. Ka kite anō.
Kia ora. Thank you.
get together next week at 9.05 a.m. Or listen online anytime on planetaudio.org.nz/RedAlertRadio.